Wednesday. We're here for another Wednesday. My name's Daniel Libby, and joining me in the studio tonight, we're going to be speaking with the president of Caesar at Ryerson, Muhammad Ali Amir. We're going to be talking about, the anti-war work that he's been doing, hip-hop, socialism, and a whole lot more coming up tonight. Plus, the co-host, Robin Nieto's got an interview he sent in with the senior economist with the United Steelworkers, Aaron Weir. So we'll be playing that interview later on, getting into some economic issues and a whole lot more here on our first Word of Mouth show for 2010, January 6th, 7 to 8 p.m. It's the Word of Mouth Wednesday. We'll be right back right after this. Word up.
Students march against the war because there's a direct correlation between the lack of funding for education and the increased funding for military and occupation of Afghanistan.
Word up, Word of Mouth Wednesday. You just heard there was a quick audio clip of from the rally to end the war in 2008, and that was Muhammad Ali Amir's voice. And actually joining me right now in the studio today is the president of Caesar, Muhammad Ali Amir. Hey, thanks. Thanks for being here today. How are things going with Caesar?
Things are good. You know, students are coming back. It's an exciting time of the year. Lots of campaigns, lots of events. We got Winter Week of Welcome next week, which I know we're going to talk about because we have. Was probably going to go down as one of the greatest concerts to ever hit Ryerson just 1 week from tonight. Like I said, lots of events happening, lots of campaigns. People are excited. Snow's coming down, but, you know, it's all good.
Dope, man. We're broadcasting here at 88.1 FM CKLN. We're at Ryerson Campus. And I just wanted to ask you about if people aren't sure what we're talking about when we say Caesar at Ryerson, what is Caesar?
Okay, so Caesar's not a salad. It's not a general. I'm saying, contrary to some people on this campus, it's not Caesar either. I'm just saying a little bit of a rant there. But if you work for Caesar, you'd feel it. What Caesar is, Continuing Education Students Association of Ryerson. So we're the students union that represents around 14,000 students, all the continuing education, distance, and part-time students on this campus. This campus has two student unions, the Ryerson Students Union, which represents all the full-time students, and Caesar represents all the part-time and continuing education. And between the two of us, we are the main voice and the strongest voice for students at Ryerson University.
Nice. And I just wanted to get into what you're working on. I guess as president of Caesar, I know you're working on a lot of things. One of the things I wanted to ask you about, just because we started off the segment with playing that interview highlight from the rally to end the war, is there anything going on right now with the anti-war campaigns?
Ryerson Students Against War is still active. It's a group that I've been involved with, actually even before my time as an elected representative at Caesar. And right now, moving forward this semester, I think there's a few things we're going to be looking at. I think we're going to be looking, I know specifically we'll be looking at the broader issue of civil liberties at home and internationally. So things like the hijab issue in France, where schools and other public institutions are trying to ban hijabs, which is a form of Islamophobia, and the same Islamophobia that keeps showing up, in these message boxes about why we should be going to war in the Middle East, why we should be going to grab oil. So there's that. The other thing we're hoping to focus on this semester is the Afghan torture scandal. So, you know, basically, we know that most Canadians and most students are really concerned that Afghan civilians are being tortured, handed over to be tortured, and Canada's turning a blind eye, and the government does not want to address it, and instead of actually address the fact that we've been complicit in abusing innocent Afghanis, the government actually just wants to take a break and go on vacation. You know, I mean, I know it's, you know, I know it's snowing and all, but I don't think this is a time for our elected leaders to be taking a vacation when Canadians want answers and students want answers to these issues. So those are things we expect to be working on this semester.
Definitely. And with what's been going on, I guess it is pretty shocking if those are the reasons. I know we're getting the official reasons has to do with the Olympics, but we definitely aren't totally sure with this. With I guess it's been the second time in 12 months that we're getting this prorogation is going on. And well, the other thing I wanted to ask you about though is are you surprised at all that we're seeing an increase in the war with the U.S. under the current President Obama? I guess some people thought that that things might be different this time of year with having a different president other than George W. Bush. Were you surprised that these are the recent announcements?
You know, that's usually how it works, right? Normally, I guess, you know, the follow-up, I guess you could call it the Nobel Prize hangover is usually to, like, invade a country or increase your invasion, right? You know, you get a Nobel Peace Prize, you know, you send soldiers to kill, you know, other soldiers, right? I mean, isn't that how it works when you win a Nobel? No? Maybe? No?
Well, yeah.
No, I'm playing. No, seriously, though, I'm not surprised at all. I actually wrote about this, about Obama during his election campaign, and I was lukewarm to Barack, I have to be honest. I was questioning myself about, is Barack Obama issuing a new form of reformism? And I only asked myself that question. I didn't think he was, but I was, you know, I scratched my head for a moment. But at the same time, I was very critical during his campaign. I wrote a piece in the Ryerson Free Press during the campaign, I think when he was still battling Hillary for the nomination from the Democratic Party, called The Doctor, the DJ, and the Democrat. The doctor being Martin Luther King, the DJ, Kool Herc, and the Democrat being Barack Obama, and looking at how the hip-hop culture holds more of Dr. King and the civil rights movement's legacy than Barack Obama. I really think Dr. King, especially in his later years, like with things like his speech, Why Oppose the War in Vietnam, with his plans to bring 1 million homeless people to march on Washington, I think Dr. King was a lot more revolutionary, similar to Malcolm X, similar to the Black Panthers. And I think that revolutionary civil rights movement is followed in the footsteps by the hip-hop movement, by what took place in the 70s in New York and other urban areas, by what took place in the 80s with the backyard politics of the DJs and the house parties and the street parties. And I really think that there was another stream that came from the civil rights movement, which was more the Jesse Jackson stream, which was more to the right of the civil rights movement, which was, you know what, we gotta join the Democratic Party, you know, create a black caucus in the Democratic Party and cross our fingers and make empty promises and one day we shall overcome. Even though Dr. King said we shall overcome and we're marching with 1 million people and we're going to sing it loud and clear, Jesse Jackson took a much more different approach. I'd call it a more sellout approach. And I think that's the direction Barack Obama, that's the school that he came from. So I'm not surprised because he came from that school of thought of you know, the sellout Democratic Party of America. And, you know, the real legacy of the civil rights movement is based in the communities and is based in the hip-hop community. The interesting thing about Obama, though, is that he was able to tap in to that true legacy, that community-based resistance, and he was able to co-opt it to win his election. Right. But that does not, I was never expecting him to actually hold true to those supporters because his main stakeholders were the Democratic Party and the corporate elites.
Right. Speaking some true words, we're speaking with Muhammad Ali, the president of Ryerson, Caesar at Ryerson. And I know, and you've been working on a lot of different things as president of Caesar, and then we also talked about a bit about the anti-war work you're doing. And I wanted to ask you something though, also about the other campaign that we're seeing, Toronto Haiti Action Committee, and the situation with that's going on in Haiti. Is there any updates on
Well, actually, there's currently a fact-finding mission by a delegation of Canadians that's actually on the ground right now in Haiti. They are blogging as they move forward. Thac.ca, thac.ca. You can go there, and you should be able to find links to the daily blogs. You can also find it on CanadaHaitiAction.ca, and there'll be some report backs across Canada, including in Toronto. I believe at the end of the month in Toronto. If you visit the websites, you'll be able to find the information. And we're working on campus right now in terms of the broader Haiti Solidarity Movement. Students of Solidarity with Haiti, which is a student club I started here at Ryerson, is working really closely with the Sopu Dep School. Now, this is a school that, it is a private school, but in a country where of Haiti where most people make $2 a day, which is the minimum wage. You know, a lot of people can't afford to send their kids to high school. They can't afford the uniforms, can't afford the textbooks. So most students don't have the luxury of having a high school diploma. So this private initiative, the Sopu Dep School, actually works with some of those impoverished youth in the Pétionville town of Haiti. And we've been assisting ourselves with the Sopu Dep School, providing funding. Remember last summer when they were under threat with being closed down because the mayor actually wanted to take over the property from the school. We were part of the campaign to try to stop that, the international campaign to keep the school alive. Now that their lease is running out, we know this. The mayor of Pétionville actually is after this land. We're working with Sopu Dep to build a new school on a new property. So right now on campus, our focus has been primarily around supporting the Sopu Dep School.
Dope, and I think this would be a good time to take a quick music break here, because you brought in a CD here, Hands Off Haiti.
Yeah, so Hands Off Haiti is a project I put together a few years ago with other activists from the Canada Haiti Action Network. It was meant to raise money for youth in Haiti through the Institute for Justice, Democracy in Haiti, based out of California, which has some of the most leading international Haiti solidarity activists as part of its board of directors, like Brian Concannon, Paul Farmer. And so we put the CD together, raised a few thousand dollars, and put together some great music by Haitians and by some really great Canadian artists. The track we're going to throw to right here is The Red Menace, formerly out of Parkdale, now out of London, England, in the United Kingdom. And the track is called I Don't Want to Wake Up.
It's 4 in the morning, I'm up in cold sweats, no breath, waking from facing the hopeless nightmares that inhabit my sleep, an adamant plea released because the planet is bleak. I'm panicking, see, cause I'm told there's a war on and panhandling peeps are cramming the streets, it's nightmarish. Mike Harris, Turner, Ernie Eves, or any other of his dirty thieves. I'm worried cause I heard of Bush's in the White House. His fingers on the button, if he push it, it's lights out. Prisoners is on political charges and the ritual targets of skin that's the darkest. Global warming deforming the ozone. Transnational cash is trashing the whole globe. Still shook as I wake from the nightmares. From reality I cringe at the light there.
I don't wanna wake up. I don't wanna see the world around me. I don't wanna get up so I can forget what's going on. I don't wanna open my eyes cause I'm more afraid of what I'll see there. And I know that it hurts
cause these dreams are bad but reality's worse.
It's 5 in the morning, I'm up in cold sweats, no breath, waking from facing the hopeless nightmares that inhabit my sleep, a damaging scene that makes me wanna panic and scream. Bad dreams keep me up at night. I imagine pigs in the streets starting gunfights. I imagine healthcare and welfare are gone from the social service. Government making cuts where they know it hurts us. On the surface, barely surviving. Kids stay at home cause they're scared of the sirens. Whether from cop cars or from air raids, rich kids watch pop stars till their hair gray. Parents stationed on Haitian vacations. Money funding operation, bomb a nation's population. Still shook as I wake from the nightmares. From reality I cringe at the nightmare.
I don't wanna wake up. I don't wanna see the world around me. I don't wanna get up so I can forget what's going on. I don't wanna open my eyes cause I'm more afraid of what I'll see there. And I know that it hurts
are bad, but reality's worse.
My God, I'm not sleeping. I'm watching the news, lost and confused. They never sing a positive tune. I was caught in the view with the screen. I was napping. I thought the images were a dream I was having. So what the fuck's going on today? I'd ask Marvin Gaye if he hadn't gone away. Oh,
mother, mother, there's still too many of you crying. Brother, brother, there's still too many of you dying. Think it's all right, it's wrong to say. When you say it, someone else is saying bombs away. I got a song to make in the midst of this chaos. But why am I making music in the midst of this chaos? With thousands laid off, cops getting paid off. A rich kid president who's died, let him play boss. Still shook as I wake from the nightmares. This reality, I cringe at the nightmare.
Up. I don't wanna see the world around me. I don't wanna get up so I can forget what's going on. I don't wanna open my eyes, cause I'm more afraid of what I'll see there. And I know that it hurts,
cause these dreams are bad for reality.
Word of Mouth Wednesday. We're back. We're just listening in the background. You can hear the end of that track there by the Red Menace off the Hands Off Haiti mixtape CD. And we got Muhammad Ali Amir still in the studio. We've got a few more questions to ask him about. But since I guess we just played a hip-hop track there, I wanted to get into some of the stuff you're working on as MC Muhammad Ali in the hip-hop community. Involving socialism, I guess. What is socialist hip hop? What does it mean to you?
Okay, so that's a really interesting question. So socialist hip hop is more than one thing. Like, it's a collective of artists who really believe a better world is possible. To sound really vague about it, specifically, it's three things. Let's see. So the first thing, I guess, is like what you normally think of when you think of hip-hop and politics, right? It's artists and getting together, right, putting together really progressive music, progressive shows, benefits. You know, the typical, I'm going to do a song to save the environment. I'm going to do a benefit to raise funds for kids in Haiti. Something that the hip-hop community has been doing for a long time and has been successful in, reaching out to a broader audience, a younger audience. So there's that. Like, for example, the Hands Off Haiti CD is a good example of that, right? Secondly, it's being a lot more critical in regards to hip-hop and revolutionary politics. So it's one thing to pump your fist and be like, revolution, and say, you know, I listen to Dead Prez, and say, you know, fuck the system. It's another thing to really say why and what role does hip-hop play in it. So socialist hip-hop looks from an academic perspective, and academic mean analytical, really analyze, like what I was saying earlier, the role hip-hop played, as the legacy of civil rights, the civil rights movement, the role hip-hop plays right now in, a system of oppression that we live in, and really look at the hows and the whys. I mean, I could really go into it, but it would take me a good 90 minutes. But really delving deeply into the issues. And finally, socialist hip-hop is about, it's not armchair. We're going to talk about it and be all academic, but really being involved, with trying to make change happen. And right now, actually, Liam, the Red Menace, you just heard on the track a few minutes ago, him and myself are actually pushing forward a new project, something that's not yet off the ground, but we're hoping to launch it in the springtime, which would be a project to really unite a lot of sections of the hip-hop community, doing really progressive work, doing community-led initiatives, a lot of progressive artists, with for lack of a better term, the largest progressive movements in the city and this country, which are trade unions. Trade unions have been around for hundreds of years. They've been fighting the good fight. You know, if it wasn't for trade unions, we would not have something called weekends. We wouldn't have something called maternity leave. We wouldn't have something called a minimum wage. You know, trade unions and student unions as well have been fighting and having a strong progressive voice throughout the history of this country and this city, and it is the most established progressive movements existing around us. So we're trying to really bridge that gap and get folks working together. So in a nutshell, that is socialist hip hop. In the coming months, you're going to see a lot more stuff being released in terms of academics, in terms of fundraising projects and songs, and also in terms of community initiatives. So it'll be much easier to conceptualize, and it'll be in a more material fashion in the coming months. But yeah, that's what it is.
Awesome. Yeah, that's something to look forward to for the Word of Mouth Wednesday, because here on the Word of Mouth Wednesday, we talk a lot about issues with politics. We play a lot of hip-hop tracks and, you know, talk about a lot of events. We even got an interview with a trade unionist economist coming up later tonight on
yes.
the show.
Big up to my homegirl, Carolyn Egan. She's actually president of the Steelworkers, right. United Steelworkers of Canada. Just got to say big up, Carolyn.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And, you know, I know we talk a lot about problems going on in the world, you know, with politics and with stuff going wrong. But one of the things I wanted to ask you about, though, seems to be something going right, at least. We've got one victory here in Ryerson involving transit. Now, I know transit is a big issue right now because the fares have just gone up a few days ago. Now everyone's got to pay extra money to get on the transit. But what is going on with students in transit?
So what happened with the TTC and student fares is that students from across the GTA, University of Toronto, Mississauga, Scarborough, York University, Ryerson, all different student unions, student leaders got together from across the GTA, were united in one strong voice, and were able to actually make change happen at City Hall through the TTC commission. Basically, we heard about the fares going up, and right away we launched a campaign literally like the next day. We had a campaign on the ground, talked to students, got thousands upon thousands of petitions signed, hundreds upon hundreds of emails sent to the TTC. We negotiated with the TTC, were able to win some concessions, and actually now students will have the same, university students will be able to have the same discount as high school students moving forward. So we got a major victory and create a major savings for students in negotiations before the actual day of the vote. But on top of that, there were two things that were still at issue. One, the TTC wanted to have an age limit up to 25 years old, which would affect mature students. And also they only wanted to apply to full-time students, which would affect part-time students. And it was a really it was a great show of unity to see you know, myself representing part-time students. Of course, I went up to the TTC, gave a deputation at the meeting where they were going to pass the budget, and said no, this should include full-time students as well. But student leaders from across the GTA, some of which do not represent mature or part-time students, generally speaking, all spoke out in unison with the same voice, spoke out for part-time students, you know, that CSER represents and other students union represents. And we were able to actually overturn those two decisions as well. So it was actually not only a great victory, but it was a great example of how strength in numbers and unity and actually being active and engaging, you know, engaging the system and engaging the equalities can work.
Yeah, and we're speaking with the president of CSER right now, Muhammad Ali. We got him in the studio, and we only got a few minutes left, so I just wanted to make sure that we ask you about the events that are upcoming for CSER, just because since we got you here, I know so there's some big events coming up. What's going to be coming up?
Okay, so on Saturday, January 19th, we're going to have a childcare forum, and we're going to be looking at ways of actually bringing Saturday childcare to Ryerson University. So that's one big, really important thing coming up. On January 30th, I know it's a few weeks away, but we have a real hallmark of Ryerson, which is the Equity Conference, which happens every year. You know, a couple years ago, we brought Angela Davis as the keynote speaker, so that's going to be major. Every week in the Oakham Cafe in the Student Campus Center, right where CKLN is located, we will be doing a jazz night. So we'll have a DJ spinning some really chill-out tunes. Once a month, we'll have a live jazz band. And actually, one of the nights will actually be a fundraiser for CKLN itself. So awesome. CSER does support the community, does support community radio. And finally, like I mentioned earlier, was probably going to go down as one of the biggest concerts to ever hit Ryerson University is going down 1 week from tonight. Literally 24 hours, 33 and a half minutes from now. 1 week. And 33 and a half minutes, my bad. 1 week from tonight, Wednesday, January 13th, in the Ram and the Rye Pub, a free concert for Ryerson students. And also, it'll feature Danny O from, you know, the track Dear Hip Hop, one of the legends of Toronto hip hop scene, Danny O, one of the biggest juggernaut groups. I just came out on tour, did a whole tour out of the Midwest with Rhymesayers, among others. Notes to Self, definitely one of the groups blowing up in Toronto. We have my man Fitz from the United Black Students at Ryerson, who will be holding it down on the mic, and myself, MC Muhammad Ali. We have Crateology. We'll be doing a set as well, which is 4 turntables, 1 beatboxer. The beatboxer is Scott Jackson, the Scribble Jam defending champion. If you don't know, Scribble Jam is the biggest hip-hop festival in the world that goes down in Cincinnati every year, and Scott Jackson is the defending beatbox champion. It's going to be a packed lineup. It's going to be sick, and it's going to be free, and I really hope to see all Ryerson students come out and represent. And there'll be events all week long for Winter Week of Welcome. Just go to rsuonline.ca and check out all the great events for Ryerson students starting on Monday.
Dope, yeah. And it was awesome to speak with Muhammad Ali here tonight in the studio. Thanks for coming on the show. And I just wanted to play a track here. We do have a track with Danny O, the Legacy track, just because you mentioned Danny O. He's going to be in town next week, the Caesar event at the hip-hop concert. And I just want to play this Legacy track here. And thanks again, Muhammad Ali.
Peace.
Word.
This is it.
Let me shine my light to discover all the love inside. As long as I'm blessed to speak, I'll be working on my legacy. Cause I don't wanna live my life and leave nothing left behind. So while the Lord lets me breathe, I'm working on my legacy.
Yo, just finished watching Michael Jackson's memorial. Unimaginably impactful and historical. Heaven's oracle taught that the world can be horrible, but he implored you to find the divine from the deplorable. How did you make an aberration adorable? How did you steer off infection when killer bees were swarming you? How do I ensure the impossible is affordable? How do I make a change cause my voice is recordable? Mike, I thought of you when I was writing this verse to fight off the curse, the opposite of which you find worse. As you ride in that hearse, my eye convey what pride I have burst. It finally works. I realize I shine on this earth. While you were a strong stomper, I was just a meat creeper. But MLK said be proud if you a street sweeper. And Al Sharpton ruffled and woke up the deep sleepers and told your kids it's strange the world for the peacekeeper. You know what I find strange? I find it strange that you're gone. You know what I find wrong? To write your name in the song. In the past tense, it's strange I'm remaining the strong. Cause since I was born, the top is where your reign is belong. I cried today, but Michael Jackson, I'm alive to say with platinum and diamonds, you've paved and aligned the way for me to see my futures filled with many brighter days. And I'm here to leave a legacy behind the stage.
While I'm here, let me shine my light to discover all the love inside. As long as I'm blessed to speak, I'll be working on my legacy. Cause I don't wanna live my life and leave nothing left behind. So while the Lord lets me breathe, I'm working on my legacy.
Yeah.
This is it.
I am basking in the light of a single star, skin blacker than the night. Walking on the moon, one small step, I'll be leaping soon. We all get confused, I'm forever a child, and it's true. I'm a lost boy too, but not as lost as you in dreams. I realize realities, living on an earth, what a fallacy move. Galaxies made like molecules built, and who's that peeking in my windowsill? There's a light in the night that we can't see, and darkness feels a lot like me. I'm so free, midnight marauder with a hood overhead, trying to escape words I should not have said. I hope they don't notice, I keep the world in focus, breathe.
While I'm here, let me shine my light to discover all the love inside. As long as I'm blessed to speak, I'll be working on my legacy. Cause I don't wanna live my life and leave nothing left behind. So while the Lord lets me breathe, I'm working on my legacy.
Yeah.
And when I say this is it, it really means this is it.
Yes. Yeah. And we still moonwalking.
Word of mouth Wednesday. This is it. That was the Legacy track there. You heard Danny O on that track. Danny O will be in Ryerson area next week at that big concert Muhammad Ali was just talking about, taking place next Wednesday for the Ryerson students' Welcome Back Week. I guess hopefully we got a few Ryerson students, some of the Ryerson community listening, because here at 88.1 FM, we are broadcasting from Ryerson campus, 55 Gould Street location on the second floor here. And we've got a show here, Word of Mouth Wednesday. We're about halfway through the show. It's about 7:31 p.m. and we're just about getting into ready to get into our next segment. It's an interview with the senior economist for the United Steelworkers of Canada, Aaron Weir. And it was an interview conducted by the co-host, veteran host, longtime host of Word of Mouth Wednesday, Robin Nieto, who is going to be speaking with Aaron Weir about the economy, always a big issue. We're still in the midst of a prolonged recession. And, well, here's what we got on the economy.
Lots of speculation, Aaron, when it comes to our economy in 2010. What's your perspective when it comes to the economy and jobs?
Well, certainly the economy is near the bottom of a very deep hole that we started falling into in 2008. There's some preliminary signs of an economic recovery, but we've got a long way to go even to just get back to the level of economic activity and employment that we had before the crisis.
So there's concern now that the economic recovery package is coming to a slow halt in the U.S. and here in Canada. What kind of effect will that have on the economy?
Well, so far the only thing that's been stopping the downturn in our economy and starting to propel a little bit of growth is government stimulus programs. So certainly it's important for governments to continue to make investments and to continue to stimulate the economy until we've got a strong recovery underway, which hasn't happened yet. So, you know, I guess my hope is that governments will continue with the spending programs that have had some positive effect so far and could have more in the future.
So when it comes to our government here in Ontario and their policies to deal with the recession, they've come up with the proposal to privatize government assets like Hydro, Ontario Power Generation, and even the LCBO. Is this a good idea at this time?
I don't think it is. I mean, certainly those kind of privatizations wouldn't do anything to combat the recession. The government might believe that selling assets is a good way to reduce the deficit, but the problem with that is that through the privatization, the government would lose the revenues that those assets generate each and every year. So actually the government would be worse off financially if it got rid of those assets. To just give you an example, there's been speculation that the LCBO could be sold for $10 billion. If the government were to reduce its current borrowing by that $10 billion, it would save about $500 million a year going forward in interest costs. But it would lose the LCBO's profits, which last year amounted to $1.4 billion. So, you know, it would in effect be losing $3 of revenue for every dollar that it saved in interest costs.
So when you look at it that way from that kind of economic analysis, and it doesn't seem to make sense to sell off profitable assets like the LCBO, you know, what would... why would they continue with the plan if it doesn't make any kind of economic sense in the long run?
Well, hopefully they won't continue with the plan. But one of the reasons that governments sometimes do privatize assets, even when it's a bad deal, is that it does put more money onto their books in a specific fiscal year. So although the government would be losing all of the LCBO's future profits, it would be able to reduce the deficit by that $10 billion in one particular year. And if that were an election year, that might be very politically attractive to the government. Certainly that factor was at play when the conservative government of Mike Harris privatized Highway 407. The goal was really to just put some more money onto the books in a specific fiscal year to make provincial finances look better than they actually were.
And we are going into a provincial election in 2011, so there might be some merit to the privatization plan from the government's perspective. The other plan that the provincial government has to deal with the recession, and that's to introduce the HST. Can you tell me about what kind of effect the revenues from the HST will have for the province and dealing with the recession?
Sure. Well, I think one really important point is that although the HST will collect more revenue from consumers who are going to be paying provincial tax on a wider range of products and services, that money is going to be used to take provincial sales tax off of inputs purchased by businesses. So there's actually no net gain in revenue for the government. Actually, the government is going to come out of this tax reform with a little bit less revenue. The real issue is this transfer of tax payments away from business and onto consumers, which I don't think is going to produce the economic effects that some of its supporters hope for.
So in the long run, when it comes to our economy, where do you see the provincial government going? And do you think that it was mostly leading up to the election, which is just really it's next year? Do you think that it's short-term thinking when it comes to this, or is this a plan that goes along with what it's been doing for, or at least this provincial government, what it's been doing for a while now?
Well, I think it really depends on the issue. I mean, if the HST was a short-term election strategy, then I think it's backfired miserably because it's been very unpopular politically, and I don't think it's something that is going to help the government in the election. You know, I guess I have expressed the fear, though, that the rationale or the motivation for some of these potential privatizations could be to artificially make provincial finances look a little bit better going into the election. So that could be part of it. Another thing that the provincial government's doing in terms of economic policy that we haven't really talked about yet is cutting the provincial corporate income tax rate from 14% down to 10%. That's something that's going to be very popular on Bay Street. I'm not sure if it makes much difference in terms of the election, but it is going to cost the provincial treasury about $3 billion a year in lost revenues. So, certainly one of the tensions is that the government is, casting around for things like privatization to try to make the deficit look smaller. But at the same time, it's actually worsening the deficit by doing the HST in such a way that it loses some revenue and then giving up a lot more revenue through these additional corporate tax cuts.
Can you also talk about the perception and how important perception of the performance of the economy is to the economy itself? So, for instance, when an announcement is made in the media about how the economy is actually picking up and we're heading out of a recession, and how thousands of new jobs will be created, how this impacts the economy itself, as opposed to what really might be happening, like how does perception play into economic performance?
Sure. So business confidence is always an important thing in the economy. If business leaders believe the economy is going to get better, then they'll probably make bigger investments, and those additional investments themselves could actually improve the economy. Similarly, consumer confidence is a major factor. If people believe that they're secure in their jobs and they go out and spend more money, that can strengthen the economy and actually improve job opportunities. One thing that often happens is that government leaders or the Bank of Canada governor, for example, will tend to try to promote an optimistic view of the economy to try to contribute to that sense of confidence. I mean, I understand why they do that, because it can actually help a little bit, but it also means that observers should probably take some of what they say with a grain of salt, because often they are erring a little bit on the side of being more optimistic.
Yeah, and if you could, if we could end the program with this one last question, the difference between the markets and the economy. There seems to be, you know, a divide there. The markets are, you know, bullish, and the economy could remain stagnant. How does that work?
Well, there's a couple of points I'd make. One is that in terms of the main market in Canada, the Toronto Stock Exchange, it's very heavily dominated by companies in really two sectors, banking and natural resource extraction. If those sectors are doing well, usually that's good for the stock market, even though they only represent a fairly small fraction of the total Canadian economy. So, for example, the manufacturing sector has been very hard hit, but there aren't very many Canadian-based manufacturing companies listed on the stock exchange here. Another thing I think that's more generally true of the stock market everywhere, including Canada, is that it's very forward-looking. So it's trying to guess at what the future profits of companies are likely to be. So the stock market crashed in September of 2008, even before a lot of the variables in the real economy, like unemployment, started to get bad. But then also the stock market has already recovered a fair bit, even though the real economy has barely started to recover. So I think the stock market is rising on the expectation that we'll have an economic recovery, which is a positive sign, but it certainly doesn't mean that we've actually had an economic recovery yet.
Aaron, I want to thank you for your time.
Well, thanks for having me, and thanks for the good questions.
Word of mouth Wednesday, we're back here, and that was the interview right there you just heard with Aaron Weir, an economist with the United Steelworkers. It was sent in by Robin Nieto, and I got to apologize just in case it didn't come through that clearly or the volume was a bit low, because I think we had a mono file situation there, and we got a stereo board, I guess, so I guess it was only coming through on one channel, just in case it wasn't sounding as clear for you. Maybe we'll try to play some highlights in future weeks, if we can get that going. Just wanted to mention that, just because we had one call in during the as we were playing that about the volume situation. So just want to apologize there. And we're going to be moving along here on the Word of Mouth Wednesday, because there's always a lot of stuff to talk about, always a lot of things going on. This is 2010, and a major event happened at the end of 2009, which a lot of the news is focusing on. A lot of things have been going on because of it, involving it's being described as a thwarted terrorist attack. Airline that had a person on board the airline with a bomb, I guess, in their clothes. And now a major thing is going on, and that they've announced is that airlines around the world, in major cities around the world, United States, Canada, Europe, are going to be installing full body scanners, so that these scanners are going to be required of people getting on the airline who want to travel, are going to be required to go through a scanner, a radio wave radiation scanner that creates an image of the person without clothes, what they look like without clothes on. And this is very controversial. I know that I had heard that there had been some talk in, I think it was in United Kingdom, that the idea of putting children through this would be very wrong because of the nudity factor that would be creating child pornography. So I'm hearing, at least, or reading in the newspaper and stuff, that children may be exempt from these full body scans. But in terms of adults, looking like all adults are going to have to be going through a full body scanner. Well, with this in mind and thinking about this kind of stuff, you know, I decided that it would be good time to play a song by Blood of the Brave. This is a track called Glory, and, well,
I will not be pushed, filed, stamped, indexed, briefed, debriefed, or numbered. My life is my own.
For official purposes, everyone has a number. Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
6 of one, half a dozen of another.
Is this what they did to you? Is this how they tried to break you till they got what they were after? In your heads must still be the remnant of a brain. In your hearts must still be the desire to be a human being again. This is the most serious breach of etiquette.
Righteous anger in distress, but it ain't eating my soul. Another lesson for the blessed, let the hate die slow. Give the greedy the dough, give the needy my clothes. And then we'll meet them at the door and take peace. So, no, you can't have it. Now we gon' have to make peace. Make dead, trade lead, break bread or mince meat, cause I've had it. I clench love in my teeth, smile Greek style, speak while peeping the thief. You can't have it. But you ain't taking my peace. Only thing I gotta have in this land is the peace of my family. We ain't proud of man, goddamn they. Getting out of hand, death to ride up on the sand. Prep the cannon, deck the fan. Let my brethren turn the line of fire and blade him with his hand. Hold steady and hold love tight. Don't let up on the grip when getting ready to fight. Let go of your life, don't just hold up and die. My Lord, I know it's all hold us and I. Stand tall and love y'all. I can't let my people fall, so I sound the call.
Society, yes, society is a place where people exist together. Yes, that is civilization. Yes, the lone wolf belongs to the wilderness. Yes, you must not grow up to be a lone wolf.
No, sir.
You must conform.
Yes,
it is my sworn duty to see that you do conform.
Yes, yes.
As they move the pieces, the pawns and the rooks, and they pay off the knights. They turn them into crooks, shoot pillage for the king, and kill for the queen. It's of the game and the name, what it seems, what it is a lie. And they're falling from the sky with the bombs of birds that can't even fly. And me, I don't wanna, I stay humble to the ground. Close to my kin, you know what's going down. See, I know it's hard when they hide your eyes. Beat your lies and put us aside. Against each other, sister or brother. Now the state wants to take away your fathers or mothers. If you don't get it, don't worry, cause I'm still in it. And I seize the minutes of breath, bar, eat spinach. I compete for peace. The priest in the streets, I'm the deacon at the farm. Here to bless the feast. Share your eat, save your scraps. Scrape them on your lap, and you better have some food. And hide it in a shack, keep your stash. And lock it up tight. And you might think it's crazy, but it might save your life. And they might take the light and douse it in the dark.
Word of Mouth Wednesday, we're back here. That was just a track there by Blood of the Brave. We're just about ready to wrap things up here on the Word of Mouth Wednesday, but I just wanted to play a quick clip here because we got into the show. We started the show off today after the intro with a clip from the rally to end the war. It took place in 2008. Major things are going on. We even got, when I was speaking with Muhammad Ali in the interview at the start of the show, we even got into a bit of the topics going. He even mentioned the prorogation of parliament, how we're into a prorogue suspension of parliament situation. And there's a political situation. A lot of politicians in the opposition side have been saying that the reason for this has to do a lot with an issue of detainee torture. I'm just going to play a torture file here, a audio clip here of the testimony of the former defense minister, Gordon O'Connor, and the current defense minister, Peter MacKay. Here is their words. This is how Parliament has ended and been suspended with these kind of words. And this is what we're going to have as the official story until Parliament, I guess, resumes in after the Olympics. So until then, this will be the official word from the Conservatives. And maybe in future weeks, we'll play some other official words. But right here, here's Gordon O'Connor and Peter MacKay.
During my time as minister, I do not recall ever being advised of any abuse or torture of prisoners by Canadian Forces members, or any abuse or torture of detainees that they handed over to the Afghan authorities.
Clearly, the situation on the ground evolved as it continues to evolve. And our military and civilians on the ground and their teams in Ottawa received information from a wide variety of sources, from Canadian officials, our allies, embedded media, international organizations, and others.
Members of the opposition go on in the House of Commons talking about a cover-up of abuse and torture. In effect, what they are saying is that the government and Canadian forces are in some form of collusion on abuse and torture. But for this fallacy to occur, up to 8 levels of the Army would have to be involved through 3 or 4 rotations. This involves thousands of people. This would be the cover-up of all cover-ups, and as a premise, it simply goes beyond common sense. The opposition may not like how we are conducting this war, and that is their right. But to, in effect, accuse the government and the entire chain of command of the military of a cover-up is irresponsible. I visited the troops in Afghanistan 4 times while I was minister. And during my 3rd visit, I visited the Afghan prison in Kandahar. I was accompanied by a few Canadian military and civilians, one of which was from Correctional Services of Canada. The prison had 3 categories of prisoners: political, criminal, and youth. Seeing the prison firsthand was like stepping back in time. It was medieval looking with stone culverts on each side of the main access. I asked to look in cells at random, and the prison cells held many prisoners and were very grubby. I went into areas that housed political and criminal prisoners. I also asked to see the guards' quarters, which to my surprise were no better except that they did not have locked doors. At no time did any Canadian accompanying me or any inmate make any accusation of abuse or torture. In fact, during my 4 visits to Kandahar and 3 visits to Kabul, I do not recall anyone, military or civilian, ever mention the abuse or torture of prisoners.
There is not a Canadian Forces member deployed to Afghanistan who is not fully familiar with the fundamental legal framework and the obligations for conducting operations. This is part of their basic training. And let me state clearly, Mr. Chair and colleagues, when our personnel in theater, military, diplomatic, or others have raised concerns, as a government, we have acted. This is part of what we do. This is part of what we expect. This is part of the chain that comes from the people in theater. It's part of the values and ethics and commitment of the professionalism that permeates the Canadian mission and the actions of Canadians serving on this mission. Mr. Chair, you've heard from others on the complexity of issues we were dealing with at the time when we first deployed into Kandahar province. As was described by Minister O'Connor, this was a difficult, dangerous mission, and it continues to be so.
Wednesday. Those are some words there. Very important words, official testimony there from the current government on the situation of detainee torture and the allegations that are currently going on in Parliament. If there was Parliament on, I guess that'd be what they'd be talking about if it was going to be resuming in January. But it looks like they're going to be prorogued, and that issue will be on the sidelines, I guess. I'm sure the opposition will still have some words and stuff to say, so we might be getting into that in the future weeks, get some different opinions on that situation. We also just had that instrumental going on in the background, Society's Brainwashed DJ Premier's Ill Bill instrumental. There, you heard it. And just also wanted to thank our guest at the top of the show, MC Muhammad Ali Amir, who's also the president of CSER at Ryerson, the Continuing Education Students Alliance here at Ryerson. And also wanted to thank Robin Yetzo's guest, Aaron Weir, who's the United Steelworkers economist. And just in case you didn't get to hear all that interview, or in case the sound was a bit choppy, you can probably find the you can actually find that file online through Radio for All, if you're online at all. Radio for All, and actually that's a good site to go to, and you can just search CKLN. You can find a lot of archives of other people's work. Other spoken word shows on CKLN over the years have got a few archives up there, so you can do a search there for CKLN. You should be able to find a few things, or search Word of Mouth Wednesday on, if you're on Radio for All. That's the number for all. You can probably find some stuff there. And also, actually, we just started up a site on WordPress.com. WordPress.com. If you go to WednesdayWordOfMouth.wordpress.com, you can find a few links to some archives of the show. We got our show from last week, our year-end special and review show, posted there, and a few other show links to the MP3s. So if you're online at all, WednesdayWordOfMouth.wordpress.com. Is one place you can find some audio archives. And, well, that's about almost it for us here today on the Word of Mouth Wednesday. So as long as we still got a few seconds left, just wanted to announce a few events coming up. We got an event coming up on Thursday, January the 7th, so tomorrow at 8 p.m. It's a Toronto Danforth NDP and Cinema Politica presentation of a free screening of the brave new film's Rethink Afghanistan at the Center of Gravity, 1300 Girard Street East. So that's tomorrow, 8 p.m. It's a free screening of Rethink Afghanistan at 8 p.m. at the 1300 Girard Street East Center of Gravity location. More information at tdndp.ca. tdndp.ca. And one more event we got coming up on Saturday, January the 9th, 2009, 8 p.m., the Transact Club. There's an event called Free Liliani Obando. It's an evening to celebrate human rights awareness in Colombia. And there's also a musical breakout, and it's all going down at the Transact Club, which is 292 Brunswick Avenue in Toronto. So if you want to hear about the human rights awareness in Colombia, check it out this Saturday, January the 9th, 292 Transact Avenue in Brunswick Avenue in Toronto, at a place called the Transact. And that's coming up. So that's an event Saturday. Got the movie screening tomorrow. And I just want to thank you all for listening. That's our show back for 2010. We're back for a new year in 2010, wishing you all the best for the upcoming year. And stay tuned to CKLN, because next up we have the Blues Dr. Julie Hill in the building, and the show is going to be called, well, it's called The Blue Remedy. Stay tuned. Word up. Word up.